Thanks. Well, first, thank you for coming during lunchtime. And before I start, I would like to thank KIPT and the program organizers that gave me this wonderful opportunity to share some of my work with you. And I hope after the seminar, I can convince you, at least some of you, this topic is interesting, complex, and important enough to draw your attention. The title is kind of Seeing Through the Haze of Aerosol Indirect Effects on Climate. I would like to emphasize that I use the current tense. So there are a lot of stuff is work in progress. And just Andy actually gave a very good overview yesterday. And so for those of you who were not here yesterday, I gave some background. So the aerosol effects, and as mentioned yesterday by Andy, there are basically three major types. One is the aerosol direct effect that's caused by the light, the scattering by very small particles in the atmosphere. And another one, the semi-direct, is mainly caused by the absorbing properties of aerosol particles. Some aerosol particles actually absorb light. And so another one is, the major one is the aerosol interaction with the clouds then affect climate. That's called the aerosol indirect effect in general, and that's also is going to be my focus of this talk. And why aerosols? Okay, to make clouds, we know this, we need at least three things. One is, of course, you need water vapor. Okay? Another, you need some updraft to lift the air, so the air cool and can condense. Another thing we need is very small particles that act as cloud condensation nuclei. And that those particles normally in the range of about 0.1 to 1 micrometers. And this part is a necessity for aerosol particles to form cloud that actually cause the aerosol indirect effects on climate. Because as we know, the human activities generate greenhouse effect at the same time, they also generate a lot of aerosol particles into the atmosphere. Okay. This is a kind of a conventional view of aerosol indirect effects. Okay. This is original clouds, say it's in a clean environment. It's just a cartoon. In this cloud, you will have a much larger droplets. Okay. When you increase aerosol loading, and then you increase the number of cloud condensation nuclei. And then, of course, the same amount of water available, then all these, you will have very small droplets. Okay? And these small droplets then do two things, at least. And the first one is the particle, because the particle is more, is therefore the size are going to be very smaller, much smaller. And these smaller particles are more reflective. Because they have more larger surface area. This generally causes the first aerosol indirect effect. As another thing they do, because of smaller droplets, then it's kind of hard for the collection process, collision coalescence process to initiate in the clouds. Therefore, the clouds probably will rain less, last longer, and this is generally called the second aerosol indirect effects. So this picture, general picture, is kind of, you know, has been understood quite well. But there are a lot of unknown stuff. Here is a view graph adapted from a paper by Anderson et al. 2003. Just give you the actually the word I used in the title, hazy. I think the current understanding of aerosol indirect effects very hazy. By hazy, I mean two things. One is if you see this is a forward estimate from global climate models, mostly. And you can see there are very large discrepancies, uncertainties. No effect at all, and have a cooling effect much above minus 4 watts per square meters. Okay, and that's a very large uncertainty. Another is if you compare this side, and actually what you got is also got from models, climate model, but constraint with some observations like temperatures. Okay, this is people call it the inverse calculations. You compare this and this, generally speaking, the forward model estimate much larger in terms of cooling, okay? Especially the upper end. That's there is a large discrepancy. Okay.
So all the models have the same effects, both effects of aerosols and.
Not all the models. Well, actually, state of art model have climate has considered the aerosol indirect effect, but they consider a different way. I'm getting into that.
Most of those guys still only use the first indirect effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, something happened here. But anyway, the hazy actually just two things: large uncertainty, a large discrepancy. Okay. The question is why, and how we are going to improve it. And just from the previous view.
Okay, so the 1 watt there's a 1 to 2 watt per meter squared. Is that sort of for the current aerosol burden? Is that what the idea is? Because the actual units there are sort of 1 to 2 watts per meter squared. And those numbers are for the current.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, you would think you see clouds every day, you know. And you would think this problem, because you have a nice picture over there, so you see. And we understand this problem really well. Actually, it's not. Actually, the problem is to resolve this, actually, you have to come down to the fundamental physics in cloud physics, okay, to understand a cloud, which there we don't understand quite well.
When we saw on the previous slide, that was the indirect of all effects of aerosols.
You mean the previous slides?
Yeah.
Actually, that slide also includes the aerosol direct effect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which means that it's becoming.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
More or less zero, because it was not much of a cooling.
No, actually, no. Yeah, that's pretty large. You know, doubling carbon dioxide is about here.
Yeah.
But.
-1.
But you see this, the upper end, at least so far, we tend to believe the kind of overestimate of cooling. But the question is why? Okay, that's why we try to figure out why. And so to address this issue, I identify actually two things. One is to study first indirect aerosol effects. We need, in the modeling GCMs, you need to parameterize these things. Okay? One of the parameters GCM used to parameterize the aerosol indirect effects and also a cloud-related properties, okay, is because the effective radius. I will give definition next slides. Another is to address the second aerosol indirect effects through effect precipitation. One of the key process is autoconversion. Okay, I'll get into that process later on as well. So to address these two things, it's not that easy. Like I said, you have to eventually need to come down to two things, which is still not solved in cloud physics. One is called the spectral broadening. That is, the observed droplet droplet size distribution are much broader than the current theory predicted. Okay? Another thing, we don't quite understand well how the warm rain formed. Even though we know it has to kick the collection process kick in after condensation, but how these embryonic raindrops form, we don't really know that well. And many of these things, I think, at least, is related to turbulence. Okay, the turbulence seems like dark matter or dark energy for cloud physics. We just don't know that well. That's...
Can I clarify? The first attempt is you're talking about cross-section of scattering of solar light.
No, first...
The first indirect
error. Yeah.
Can you translate into physics? You have a solar light which reflects from this effective target, right?
Yeah.
That's what you need to study.
Yeah, so you have a lot of droplets, or particles in that sense. Those particles will scatter light. So the more you have, given the same amount of mass, the smaller of the size, you will get a larger surface area. And
this widening of clouds is not the direct effect of aerosols reflecting. It's
yeah.
But you put this effective radius and gives me.
Yeah, droplet UV effect radius, so not aerosol effect radius. Of course, aerosol people also use that quantity as well. The thing is the reason is because this thing has to be parametric. Both aerosol and the cloud radiative properties has to be parametrized in GCMs. And the effect radius is one of the quantities you need to use. Well, here is the effect radius. Okay. And, the Hansen Travers 74 paper actually probably is not the first paper to actually introduce the concept of effect radius, but it's the paper make this idea popularized. Okay. Anyway, the effect radius just defines the ratio of the third moment to the second moment. Hey, basically just volume divided by surface area. So the idea, the smaller of the RE, the more reflective of the cloud. Okay, and therefore, in the GCMs, if you want to further to characterize the cloud radiative properties, you also need parameterize effect radius, because this is not something you actually predict in the GCM, in the climate models. Okay, this is the general way this equation is kind of universal equation, okay? You can derive it theoretically. The L is the liquid water content of a cloud, and the N is the drop number concentration. And this rho is just rho W, it's just water density is a constant. At least beta, that's actually my focus. It's just a parameter, a non-dimensional parameter that characterizes the spectral shape of the droplet size distribution. And so far, the dominant practice is to keep this beta constant. Okay? You predict liquid water content, and try to predict drop number concentration, and then you will get the effect radius. However, we know from cloud physics, I'm kind of trained as a cloud physicist, and we know from cloud physics that droplet size distribution change a lot. The beta cannot be constant. So therefore,
why wouldn't you? I mean, my first guess would be RE would be integral R times N divided by integral of N, right? Just the mean radius. So why is that not?
Well, just the reflectivity is determined by light scattering properties. It's determined by surface area of the droplet population, particle population, instead of the number. And then the parameterization, if you write down optical depths, actually the function of the thickness or leap quarter pass in the technical jargon, divided by this effective radius. The main reason why I use effective radius is, you know, the reflectivity is determined by the surface area. And another thing is, liquid water content is a variable people normally measure and also model in model predict.
Okay, so you reduce the problem to scattering on some magic effective radius instead of studying scattering problem on whole distribution of size.
No,
that is not misleading.
But it's not the same. It's not the same.
It's not the same, but that's only we can do right now. It would be nice if you have a computer powerful enough to calculate each individual particles, but you just cannot do it. You cannot afford to do it.
I would do scattering problem for each particle then average, but not.
You cannot do it. Just you cannot afford to do it. It would be nice if you can do it.
But it's pretty straightforward. You count area with a fixed volume.
Give me a picture, like, the best GCMs now actually only carry two things, liquid water content, drop number concentration. And the actual number concentration just started to carry it. So you just, you know, the complexity of the problem.
Are there any scattering calculations you can do on assumed distributions? Are there any statistical calculations?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Then the thing, that's actually
extra parameters.
That's the beta. That's, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah, that's what I try to do, actually. What I try to demonstrate is you just carry drop number concentration and liquid water content, the two moments are not enough. You at least need another one. That's the beta, the spectral shape. Okay, now the spectral broadening. What is the problem is, this is a cartoon, okay? Don't take, just take for, well, this it is an exaggeration of the reality, okay? This is a conventional theory, okay? It predicts a very narrow distribution, okay? Drop size distribution. And this is a thing typical you observe in clouds, much broader than you predicted. This in cloud physics we have a term called the spectral broadening. It anomaly has been there since the very beginning of cloud physics. Okay.
This broad distribution is something which is measured over a large scale. It's not a local distribution on the
problem. Well, even you measure like very small scale, you still see this broadening.
Very how small? What is the smallest scale?
Well, the typical one people use now is about an aircraft is about 1 second sampling. That's about cover about 100 meter. But you can down even smaller. Even you can down as small, even smaller, I still see this. It's broad. Of course, this is like I said, it's just a cartoon to give you an idea of this problem.
What are the typical numbers for the drop-off radius?
A radius?
The smallest radius.
Well, normally people start to define the drop-off radius, say it's 1 micron. Of course, you can have define what is clouds in a different way. Some people define just as, remember the color curve Andy showed yesterday, and there is a hung once you pass the peak critical radius. It defines cloud, but some people call that haze particles. But probably you can measure it about 1 micron. There's.
Are there any small ones?
You mean cloud dropping?
Yeah.
Small one you can call, some people call the haze particles. It's just definition. Oh, yeah. Well, so to understand this problem, because I know. What we think is, you know, because of turbulence in the atmosphere, clouds are very turbulent environment. So what we did, we just cannot follow each track of the tracks of each droplet in a turbulent environment. we just seek a simplified approach, borrow ideas from statistical mechanics. Okay, just analogy here. So let's suppose it's just typical gas, and like we knew very beginning early days of the statistical mechanics, we know we can describe, you know, we know the laws for each molecules. Right here, we know the equation for each droplet. Okay. And the early days, the kinetics cannot predict the thermodynamic properties really well. And now, we face in cloud physics, we face this typical model cannot predict droplet size distribution really well. And then, of course, smart people, they introduce statistics to build up the statistical mechanics, then you can predict a most probable distribution. And from there, you make the link from kinetics to thermodynamic properties. So based on this kind of thinking, we make a similar analogy. So we try to build up a system theory that consider the droplet as a system instead of try to follow each droplet. Then we derive a size distribution that occurs most probably, we call it the most probable cloud droplet size distribution. It turns out this distribution is a Weibull distribution. Okay, it's written in this form.
The reason why it's so long tail distribution?
Well, that's the reason. It still has not been understood really well, but I think one of the reasons is because turbulence. And turbulence do a lot of things. And one of the things they have caused a lot of fluctuations. Another thing that can bring drying air, make a lot of entrainment mixing process that occur in clouds. That will cause the broadening. Of course, before the start of collection process. Once you start a collection process, collection process also will make, you know, the distribution broader. But that's the thing.
This sort of out of the statistical mechanics, means you have coalescing particles, but you
know. No, it has no coalescence at all. No, no, the collection process, collision coalescence has not come into this picture.
Okay,
right.
So
it's condensation, evaporation, and their interactions.
Coalescence make power tail.
But the theory, I think. The system theory we derive, I think, it should work for collection process as well. Here is comparison with observations, how the theory works. Okay, and in the x-axis is relative dispersion of a droplet size distribution. Okay. And in the think of droplet size distribution as a PDF, probability density function, the dispersion is just a standard deviation divided by the mean. Okay, it's a non-dimensional parameter. And this beta factor is also non-dimensional parameter show up in the equation for parameterizing factor radius. Okay, and but this in this kind of view graph, diagram, if the distribution is monodispersed, okay, you will get a zero on this line here. The beta is one, and dispersion is zero. Okay, that's a lot of models assume right now. Either a constant or just simply treat it as monodispersed, or this, you know, green line, and these black dots are measurements. So each dot represents a one size distribution.
Yeah, wait a minute. Since you adopted a long tail distribution,
yeah,
using only mean and standard deviation is not quite fair. You now defaulted to sort of Gaussian language.
But not
the
really.
On this slide, you convince us that should be a stretch exponent, a Weibull type.
Yeah, it's Weibull.
And now I'm lost. I don't trust this epsilon anymore.
This is actually for Weibull, you get this curve. the red curve represents a Weibull distribution.
Right, but
when you change,
Weibull is not characterized by standard deviation and mean.
You can't.
It requires high moments substantially involved.
No, not exactly.
That's a problem of presenter. But if you take a long tail distribution, you must include a high moments, not only limit yourself to.
Yeah, well, if in theory, if you assume, if you know the is a Weibull distribution.
Since I bought your Weibull distribution,
yeah.
I'm lost on the next slide.
Yeah, well, if you buy the Weibull distribution,
right.
If you believe Weibull distribution, then you only need three parameters to describe a Weibull distribution.
Right.
Okay?
Oh, if you plot against those parameters, it's fine
with me. The idea is, if you do a curve fitting for each droplet size distribution, you can do that. But this view graph, the nice thing about this view graph, you can actually study a family of distribution to judge what statistically a family of distribution belong to.
What are the black dots? How you get those black dots? What are the data?
The data are measured by aircraft. So you have
beta and
epsilon. Size distribution. So you have aircraft with the instrument size. You measure droplet size distributions. So from the droplet size distribution, you can calculate this and this.
So you're saying if we had the third axis, these black dots would also fit nicely with the Weibull distribution?
What? This is a Weibull. This is a theory. The red curve is a Weibull. Okay, when you change the spectral, the shape, dispersion, if you go to the Weibull distribution.
Two out of three parameters, fine. You don't know if the third is.
It's not the thing. The thing is, this actually.
Behind the scene here.
It's not exact. I can show you what happened is, given a distribution, not just the Weibull, actually, my original is also log normal. Gaussian is just here. You know, if Gaussian, whatever, as long as you have three parameters, you can put on this view graph to study whether these families belong to this function. Remember, this function is actually the function now because you have three parameters unknown.
So the beta is more or less
in
some
amount,
you
make beta
7.
Yeah, the beta?
Yes.
So these two are non-dimensional. Therefore, if you all, remember the red curve represents a Weibull. Okay? If the theory works okay, works fine, then the measurement should follow along this curve. It follow. If some people use log normal. Okay? I didn't show here. If log normal curves that go like this. Of course, another is a gamma function. Gamma function is very close to the Weibull. Well, here I have this Weibull distribution from the theory.
Weibull is what B? What parameter? This Weibull distribution has a parameter. B.
Yeah, B.
So
it's B. You can is uniquely related to the dispersion, relative dispersion.
If
there is a function to it. Yeah, there is a function to it. It just when the B increase, the dispersion decrease. There is a unique relationship to it. So with that in mind, then we can actually can study this effect of dispersion on cloud radiative properties. Okay, if you ignore how big difference it could make. This is the x-axis is the reflectivity of monodisperse clouds, which by that I mean assume the droplet size distribution are monodispersed. Okay? And this y-axis is the difference, relative difference caused by this assumption under different dispersion. Okay? And these different curves represent, if you're given this different dispersion value, you will get what kind of errors. Okay? And the green line, dashed line, is a reference point for you to get an idea how significant the dispersion effect could be. Okay? So the two things. One is this is like in the red curves kind of typical thing dispersion you probably would see in the clouds. And so even for this one, it's already pretty large. It can be quite significant. Okay, it's very close to, if we ignore it, can cause an effect very close to a green doubling greenhouse effect. Another thing is, you see this, there is a maximum effect occurs. Okay, it is the maximum occurs is just actually the clouds. The current clouds about reflectivity is somewhere around probably 0.3, 0.5, 0.6, this region. Okay, and that is the region the dispersion has the maximum effect. So all of these things combine together make us to think dispersion effect has to be very important for determining cloud-related properties. And here is the cloud reflectivity, and therefore cloud-related climate. And so there, based on this, then we ask ourselves whether, what if the aerosol particles we put into atmosphere by human activities cause any change of a cloud droplet size distribution? Then we dig into the literature actually. We found this, the left hand view graph. Okay, this is drop number concentration relative dispersion. Okay. And these are measurements from different authors. What we found is this direction is increasing cloud reflectivity, and this direction is decreasing cloud reflectivity. Okay. Because what we found is we actually in clouds, you keep other things the same as we study the Toomey effect, traditional aerosol indirect effect. And we assume other things remain unchanged or the same. If you assume the only thing you change is the aerosol loading in the atmosphere, you increase drop number concentration, that's we know. And at the same time, you actually also increase relative dispersion. Okay? Of course, they are large scale. And this concurrent increase relative dispersion actually causes a warming effect instead of cooling effect on the climate. And this, at that time, we estimate based on these three lines, is kind of range anywhere from 10% to 80%.
For a scene that's already contains a lot of clouds, right? Like that's kind of half.
Yeah, for a cloud, if you don't consider dispersion effect. Okay, if you use this one. Why it's warm? Because
bigger droplets.
No, make the droplet distribution relatively broader.
Right.
Yeah. Therefore, if you see the previous equation from the effector radius, make the effector radius larger. Therefore, make the reflectivity smaller. Just the opposite from the drop number concentration. And at that time, we got this, then what's the physics? Why, whether there's any physical meaning to it? Is it? So the right-hand side is the view graph show some theoretical studies. Okay, one is our analytical expression, another is the partial model simulation. It's basically the dots in this view graph represent our analytical expression, and this one. Okay. And the triangle is the model result. We compare, and this different color represent different, you gave different updraft velocities. Okay. In general, you can see.
What is W?
W is the updraft velocity.
Uh-huh.
So you can see from this.
And then there's a concentration.
Just drop number concentration, okay? And you can see two things. One thing is, yes, we will increase aerosol loading. You increase drop number concentration. At the same time, you make this dispersion larger. Okay, why now? One of the things behind this is because the more droplet you have, the more computation for water vapor. Okay, there will make the condensational process slower, And the condensation process make the droplet size distribution narrower. Therefore, what happens in real cloud, you will get a broader distribution. Another thing is, when you increase updraft velocity, you keep other things the same, actually make this drop dispersion narrow from red to the black. Okay? And that's, I think, one of the reasons why we in cloud we see this, you know, large scatter. Because the cloud will have different updraft velocities. Of course, another reason which we don't quite understand well is the turbulence effects, which
Since
if you have stronger updraft,
you generally have a stronger turbulence as well.
Yeah.
That will increase the beats because it will make more.
Yeah, the interactions.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Are there any observations? Those are only
models. These are observations.
Yeah, but here you don't correlate it with updraft.
Well, updraft velocity. We have, we have some observations, but yeah, I don't have the view graph here. So now what happens if you put this in the GCMs? Okay, here is a collaborator with the Australian scientist, Leon Rothstein. And we did some sensitivity study in his GCMs. We basically ran four sensitivity studies. One, like just his original without considering dispersion effect. Remember the three curves I have? They have a lower, so what happens if I put dispersion effect but with a lower bound, and then the middle, then the upper one. So here is the percentage reduction to his original LSI indirect effect, first LSI indirect effect. This is his original value. So it's corresponding. Generally speaking, you can see we'll consider the dispersion effect, the cooling effect from aerosol indirect, first aerosol indirect is less. And if you take the average, now I think more data show probably the average is about 30% reduction.
It's a lower middle upper or a cloud layer, cloud heights?
No, it's not. Remember the dispersion, dispersion and the drop number concentration, because the large scatter, we don't have just sensitivity.
Global mean?
Yeah, global mean. Yeah, it's global mean.
Global mean.
Yeah.
Rate of effect is
reduced. Yeah. It's about somewhere 30%. The largest one probably 40%. That's probably overestimated, I think. The middle one tends to be more right.
Like 0.2 watts per square meter.
0.2.
Difference. The effect.
Yeah, that's probably.
So it corresponds to temperature less than 0.1 Kelvin. Forcing. It's a permanent forcing now.
You can relate to forcing, then to temperature, but I cannot answer that because I cannot relate directly to forcing, tell you how the temperature.
Was this implemented in a way that it affected the cloud field itself? I mean, was it just kind of an offline calculation?
It's not offline, it's online calculation. But whether it affects the cloud field in general, it could be. Actually, there is one property that's not shown here, actually make the, not this property, once you consider the R conversion thing, the next. Actually, he got a much better simulation of ITCZ. That probably could come from the reason of the, you know, the cloud fields, I don't know. Now, I have this kind of, the modified view of aerosol indirect effects, okay. This is the original one. You have a clean. Yeah. Then if you have more aerosols, you get this one. More smaller drop. Okay. And now we have this new view. It's we have aerosol, increased aerosol loading. Well, of course, you generate more smaller droplets, that's for sure. But at the same time, you make the dispersion relatively broader. And there, this is a dispersion effect. Therefore, the previous one is mainly, the traditional one is mainly considered the effect of aerosol loading on drop number concentration. Therefore, if we need to consider at least both number and dispersion, right? But this we have to consider, but add additional complexity to this problem. You know, like Andy talked yesterday, this problem already is complicated, and therefore, but we have to consider dispersion. That's the thing. The next question is how we are going to parameterize dispersion, and so that the GCI model can be used. That's, you know, that's another question. Now I'll switch gear to the our conversion process. Right? This is the general idea. It's give you a general idea. What is our conversion process? It's just the first step for cloud droplets to become a small digital size drops, okay, raindrops. And this is actually the over time people actually sampling the cloud droplets with a gun stick outside. They actually can have a picture. Not like nowadays, it's just light scattering, there's no picture, right? And that's nice. So you can see in this population, there are some, you know, lucky drops that can become big. Most of them are very small. The question is why? From the fundamental level, in cloud physics, we need to ask why. And this problem has not been solved. It's still there, right? And another question, practical question, how we are going to parameterize this process in the GCMs? Because GCMs is a grid size, it's too big. We cannot afford this to run a very detailed microphysical model. So it has to be parameterized. So the practical question, how we are going to parameterize this thing? Well, of course, these two are related. Without the...
You're still saying that this lucky drop is not created by a coalescence?
This one? We don't know. This is just, a picture. It's because I don't know how big this size is. It could be created by a collection process. But there is a question. I will get into that. The problem next slide.
But you have big tail. It could be from your tail.
Yeah, right. The question is how the tails are generated. I have a theory, but the theory has not been accepted universally.
You forget about theory. You know the size of lucky drop, and you know your distribution, viable distribution. Can you just cut the tail which corresponds to this size?
That's what I'm show you.
Oh,
yeah,
you
I'm going to show you. Yeah, that's what I did actually. That's to give an idea of the out parameterization development. Okay, so generally speaking, people at the very beginning, probably early 60s, okay, from Kessler actually kind of visualized the out conversion process, some kind of threshold process. So you can write down as basically a product of two functions. So if you, this P represents our conversion rate of liquid or content, for example, then you can express this as a product of two functions. One is P0, so I call it the rate function, kind of it's not a good term, and T is the threshold function.
And where threshold comes from?
The main thing is, at that time, the traditional thing is come from the collection process. Because to start the collision coalescence process, the drop has to be big enough.
There's no thresholds in that.
Well, from here, you just think of this is the people visualized.
It's a very small function. And there are. Power law.
It's,
and when you write the collision kernel, it's
no, like collection for two drops to collide with each other, the drop has to be big enough. When you consider turbulence, that's another story. You can actually make monodispersed to collide with each other, but that's the gravitational collection.
Yeah, it's still the key thing is that the droplet have to grow to a certain size so that they fall at a significantly larger speed than the others. Since that is a steep function of size, and once that begins, it self-accelerates. Okay?
Right, but I mean, still is power law. I mean, you can
remember. Oh, no,
by the function, but.
I, I will show you.
Velocity is size square. Velocity difference is a difference of size square when they are small, and then even less power when they are getting larger. And it's not a lot.
No, the collection efficiency. The collection efficiency will be zero at some size when particle too small.
Very, very close radius,
and you
have collision
stations. Yeah. So, but you will see that in the next few slides. But anyway, the whole thing actually started just early 60s in modeling clouds, cloud models, okay? At that time, very crude parameterization. Just Kessler just have this idea of separate water into cloud water, the rain water. So he had this idea, then he introduced our conversion to describe the rate of a cloud water to rain water. He used a very simple one. It's still used by now. All kinds of model, from large eddy simulation, the cloud resolving model, regional climbing model, climbing models. They virtually use a very similar micro package of microphysics parameterizations. Well, so far, the existing parameterization basically comes from the two types, two approach to get it. One is just like Kessler, the Sundquist, it's just educated guess. And they just think, you know, it has to be that way. They write it down. It's actually, after I did this work, it's very amazing that how their interpretation is so good. If I was actually demonstrated.
Depends on education.
Yeah, depends on education. And another way is to run very detailed microphysical model. Okay, then curve fitting these results to get the parameterization. Okay, but this kind of parameterization, that's probably the main schemes are used by now. And the physics behind is not that clear. Okay. And when I start to work on this problem, it's not good enough to me because I need to know which quantity represent what kind of parameter you tuned, and what physics behind it in order to get a good understanding where the aerosol indirect effects actually come from, whether from number or from dispersion. Okay. And especially if you classify the schemes according to the threshold type, the threshold function T, you can basically classify as three types. One is Kessler, that's basically T is a step function. It's nothing at all. Okay? And another one, there's no threshold function, it's basically like it's the power law behavior. Another is Sundquist type, it's not like a step function, it's not like this, but it's like this, relative smooth and step function. So what we try to do is try to see whether we can actually derive these kind of parameterizations, at least from first principles, as much as possible. Okay. Therefore, we can get some kind of physical understanding of this. But when I put this picture, I thought probably the physics, you know, physicists don't know our chemistry probably in this audience. Just actually, and even in the old times, cloud physics attracted attention of, you know, physicists and chemists. Everybody knows Erwin Lemuel got a Nobel Prize in chemistry. Actually, he is one of the pioneer in weather modification, and also probably one of the early people to study collection process. This basically is a continuous collection in his model, okay? Because continuous is very simple. So this picture only consider a coalescent process, okay? Therefore, the rate change of the mass of a single droplets, you can write down this. The K is the collection kernel, N is a number constant, droplet size distribution. Okay, then you can get a rate like this. Okay, and what I did is you just by using a generalized mean value theorem for integrals to the collection equation and apply a collection kernel. they actually you can get, you basically can recover most, virtually all of those existing parameterizations by using different assumptions. Actually, you can see the Kessler, you get one to get Kessler, and you need to assume the clashing current is constant. You want to get some others, you need to assume the clashing efficiency are constant. But we know that not right, so we derive our own, use relatively realistic clashing kernel, it's a long kernel. This is our expression, theoretical expression for the rate function. That's the power law, as you said. And these are the different colors represent the schemes from different peoples. Okay. You can see there are large two things. One is there are large discrepancies among the parameterizations people used. And the black curve is our theoretical expression. Generally speaking, it catch the average behavior of those parameterizations. Another thing I would like to emphasize, many of these previous parameterizations don't have the dispersion included. Okay? Because at that time, probably, even though people know it's an important thing to start precipitation, but probably the model doesn't have enough resource to carry this variable. But anyway, I don't include dispersion. It's not good enough. Therefore, in our scheme, we actually include dispersion. Say that the Behan and the Berry, they do include a dispersion variable in their parameterization.
Is it liquid or content?
Yeah, it's error is liquid or content, and the drop number concentration.
But what did you take from K for your kernel?
That's a long kernel. It's basically the power law. Long kernel is like, kernel is to the proportion of the power of the radius to the power of 6. So it's not constant as though. But here, well, here's another, it's just comparison. This is the one, another one has been used, still using very widely now. Here is our new one. Is they have different powers. Anyway, this one you get, like I said, you get this one, you need to assume the collection efficiency is constant. And but we know it's not right. If you use a long kernel, you get this one. Okay. Now it comes down to a question. A colleague of mine, Warren Wiscombe, likes to call this the Valley of Death. If you see droplet size distribution, you have a one droplet size distribution. They have another one raindrop size distribution. In the middle, okay, there is a minimum in terms of concentration. That size corresponds probably somewhere between 10 to 30, probably around 20 micron. Okay, but if you look at this picture, this droplet size. This is the growth rate. Okay. I call it death valley is because of this. Okay, this is the condensational growth. We know the condensation actually decreases the droplet size. The growth rate of the size, the R is the radius here. And this is the collection process. Collection process, the growth rate actually proportional, increase the droplet size, this one. So you go this, but how this the droplets this size are formed, we still don't know that well. We have some ideas, especially caused by turbulence. And some people say it's a giant nuclei, but all kinds of ideas. Like I said, therefore you still have to explain this. Yeah, you run into the same fundamental difficulties. One is spectral broadening, another how these drops. Lucky drops are formed. It's still a puzzle. Okay, what we did is, like we did for the droplet system, what we did, okay, is in a turbulent environment, for those droplets of size around, say, 20 microns, we assume, we think for those droplets, probably need three processes. So one is condensation, evaporation. That previous figure only show condensation and collection, okay? Evaporation ignore. That's the typical thinking. And but we think evaporation also play a role in that. The three processes actually going on at the same time for this kind of droplet. To do that, we consider these three processes as dynamical statistical equilibrium. Okay? Then actually we call it the use the idea very similar to trace nucleation. And we can derive this.
Evaporation is just as inefficient as condensation. So why would evaporation be effective on large droplets? You're saying that evaporation would shrink large droplets?
That's complicated. If you think of individual droplet sense, this is a complicated. You can think of this way. One explanation is we have turbulence, right? You always have turbulence.
Yeah.
Like above clouds, you normally have a dry air somehow. And you bring the entrainment mixing caused by turbulence, bring dry air. Okay? Bring dry air, make the mixing will some make, because the dry air makes some droplets evaporate. And then the parcel or the alley, whatever you want to call, will sink. And then we'll come back again, this the cycling.
But would that depend on the droplet size sitting? That would sort of
depend on size. The idea is there are all kinds of mechanisms. But the general idea is some, because of this turbine and entrainment mixing process occurring in clouds, what happened is some lucky drops or bigger drops grow at expense of some small drop. Evaporation by evaporation. Oh, therefore, if statistical thinking, you have to bring in evaporation in. Without it, you cannot have the big drops. So the big drops grow at the expense of small drops. That's the general picture. But the details of the process are complicated. I don't think
we have. Pulsational? I mean, could you think of that naively, that you have sort of a molecule coming in? Easier time hitting a big droplet than a small droplet, or is that too naive?
It's not like that.
The
partial pressure is also bigger over the small droplet than the big one.
Yeah, so that's a surface effect. Right?
No, but that's not true. That's not for ice, but not for droplets, probably wouldn't be enough time to work.
Yeah.
Ice, that's what
but in one word, this problem, we just have ideas, okay? How the entrainment mixing will generate this. But the details, we really don't know. Right? Probably some of you may have ideas how to treat it. We don't know, therefore, we use approach statistical mechanics. So just say, at this point, they got an equilibrium, statistical equilibrium.
Saturated air is a big part of it.
Yeah, the three process at equilibrium. Then we will get a connective potential we define, which can think of as some kind of thermodynamic energy. Okay. Anyway, so then we consider initiation ring as actually barrier crossing process. Like this is the radius.
Comment you can
yield
curve 2. We have a dense valley in California. So the mountain surrounding it is called Coffin Mount.
What mountain?
Coffin, yeah.
Oh, really? Not life? Oh, that's too bad. Actually, I went to website, did a search, the Death Valley. Yeah, I just read it yesterday.
Unfortunately, they use both terms.
Well, I will actually have the reason why I call it the mountain of life.
Yeah.
The reason is this. Without this barrier, the ring would not form. Okay, you have to have this barrier. The barrier is a tricky thing, okay? So anyway, the process, the reignition is like a barrier crossing, okay? So when just like nucleation of small particles, aerosol particles, when the particle is small, you climb this mountain, that range, the energy increases, so you need to spend a lot of energy to climb this. Once you pass this barrier, and then the process becomes spontaneous, okay? Well, the barrier do things like, why is mountain of life without this barrier? You think if all the drops can grow big enough, that's impossible because you only have a limit of water, a for those to consume. So, and eventually all of them are become small, too small to precipitate without this barrier. But if the barrier are too big, then all of them are still small because none of them can actually go over the barrier. So the barrier actually is something that's good. We need this barrier for rain to form. That's actually one of the reasons why I call it a mountain life anyway.
Can you treat in both ways? You can go from one potential well to another? Or
well, that's actually something I will, last slide, I think we can, but I don't have, the work has not finished yet. I will get. But here's the thing, nice thing about this, the barrier, then we can define the critical radius. Remember in the Kessler scheme, okay, in parameterization, they have one parameter, they tune it. They call the critical radius RC. They tune it, okay, in the model. So nice thing from this theory, actually, we can define this critical radius just as correspond to the barrier. By this, then we actually can derive expression, analytical expression that relate this critical radius to number concentration, liquid content. Okay, and then the people actually can use it. Okay, in the GCM without tuning. That's why once we got this. Again, we collaborate with Ron Rustin in Australia to do sensitivity study in his GCM. So we do three things, three tests. One is the old one. Here's a Kessler type. Okay. Another use, we call the hybrid. We keep this, the rate function is the same as his, the original one, but we change the threshold function. And this is the original, this is the new one, because now we have the analytical expression for critical radius, okay? And then we use totally the new one. Then we run his GCM to see the effect. You can see, generally speaking, you know, if you use the new one, you will reduce the cooling effect from second, also indirect effects, okay? And especially, I would like to emphasize, at least I was struck by surprise by these results, because we just hybrid one. The effect from hybrid one just change, actually what happened, it just change the threshold function a little bit. Can cause the effects above 27%, okay? Because then we know the delta type, the Kessler type delta function, like all or nothing, reality should not work that way, although it's pretty good approximation. Therefore, it drives me to do the next work, to actually really look at whether we can derive the threshold function from theory. Okay, well, I use this. The reason I use this stuff here is that when the paper was published, was highlighted by American Geophysical Society. And then another reason actually was highlighted by Physics Today as an update. That's the reason I want to put up. But I tried to work with the Physics Today PDF. Somehow the PDF Physics Today was secured. I couldn't cut and paste. Therefore, I used this one also. We also did one at the lab bulletin. Okay, this is my collaborators of their work. But anyway, we'll try to show the physics actually are interested in this stuff as well.
So if you, when you test it in the GCM, of course we don't really know what the real answer is in terms of watts per square meter, but I guess you could pretty much see if the clouds, they rain at the rate that it, that sort of is reasonable.
Yeah, actually we got the watts per square meters.
Globally in a GCM.
Yeah, global in a GCM.
And you mentioned that there was some circulation impact or some impact on the cloud field.
Yeah. Oh well, I don't think we examined the cloud field exactly, but I think we have some effect on that where the ITCZ occurs. But I forgot exactly. You know, I can send you the paper.
So since you predict a dramatic change in percent of first and second effect. So that means the previous people dramatically wrong. What makes your theory, a new theory, trustable, or how you prove that this is what?
Oh, this, I'm sure. One thing I tend to bear in mind is you have some physics behind it. You have a physical understanding of each parameter. That's one thing I of course, I still use this. To derive this analytical expression, you have to make some assumption, but you have a better physics behind the parameterization you have. That's one reason. So from a physical point of view, because we know, also we know, in order to get the previous, some of the previous parameterizations, you need to make assumptions. And we know those assumptions is incorrect.
But do you have a critical observation
I will show you some view graph. Yeah. That's another reason I'm going to show you here. This is the theoretical. We eventually derive a theoretical threshold function. Okay, that is a function of two non-dimensional parameters. One is the ratio of the mean to the critical mass, the droplet population. Okay, and another is the relative dispersion of droplet size distribution. Okay, this is very nice. When I got this result, I'm so happy. It's because by varying dispersion, you actually recover all the existing type of parameterization. So when your dispersion is very large, you have a very broad distribution, you will get a Kessler type. The threshold function is 1. Okay, that's normal. Yeah. But once we have a very narrow distribution and monodisperse, then you recover the Kessler type delta function. And this, if you use an average one, say, then you get a Sundquist type. So what happened is, in reality, probably depends on the spectral shape of droplet size distribution. It pretty much determine how fast or the behavior of the conversion from cloud water to rain water. But this from here to, remember right now, these three types are used arbitrarily pretty much by different people in models. Now we know actually this has an effect. It's correspond to dispersion.
Why don't you take this distribution, whatever the distribution you have over sizes, put it into collision kernel and run on PC, this is a really, I mean, it's one-dimensional, well, you integrate, but it takes like a few hours to run with any initial distribution. And then you'll see how this distribution would grow into large sizes, and then you can compare it with your
integration model. Theoretically speak, in principle, you can do that. But in this kind of model, there is still a problem. Like I said, we don't really know how to treat untreatment mixing process. So how the evaporation is going to affect this, the tail of the droplet size distribution, the current model don't really know how.
The moment collisions take over and large droplets appear, gravitational collisions start, you can forget about everything, it's so fast.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Once you will get past this barrier,
but this all could be described by collision kernel, which completely determines it. You then can check if your observation model works.
You are right. Only when the threshold part is here. Okay? Only here, the only process is the collection process. Before that, three processes going on. Well, you're right. The most of how we have a very precipitation, very after you start your precipitation. That's why actually our conversion process, sometimes if you want to see how effect on your precipitation amount, the effect is not that big. Because
which epsilon fits observations?
Which one?
Which epsilon?
Depends on who asks. Some people use this one. Some people use this one. Some people use this one. Should.
We're talking about you're showing a range of behaviors over a wide, some precipitating, some non-precipitating clouds.
Yeah, it depends. The question is, yeah, that's what we try to tell people.
The observations are the whole.
That's actually try to convey to tell people, okay, you cannot use just to grab a parameterization, use it. Actually, you have to know the dispersion corresponding to it. And the next question, based on this also, how to parameterize dispersion, it's not that easy. Okay. Well, this is we are working on to put this in the GCM to see the sensitivity study, but we haven't yet. This is a cloud resolving model. Postdoc just finished to see this effect, the threshold function. Okay, this is a non-dimensional mass mean to critical mass ratio, and this is the difference caused by the cloud cover, caused by using different. Actually, the relative dispersion. And
can I interrupt you again?
Yeah.
Because what you say, each cloud will give you a different distribution.
Not only each cloud, actually each layer, like anything,
anywhere. You sort of gave impression that a wave distribution comes from turbulence, and it has supposed to take parameter b.
Yeah.
The turbulence is more or less universal physics. Why? It might depend on some cloud, but why it's so dependent on type of clouds if turbulence is in every cloud?
Yeah, well, turbulence is in every cloud, that's for sure.
Right.
But
then why will
the intensity of the turbulence cloud? And the details behavior of turbulence are different. You can have very strong, if you run into a, say, very strong convective cloud, the turbulence is very strong. If you run into a layer cloud, the turbulence is probably weak. So
your B will be a function of many other parameters.
Another thing, like actually the purpose of this talk is to show aerosol also has an effect on the dispersion. Remember that. So it's not easy to, turbulence do something, but not the only thing. It's something we don't really understand as well as aerosol. So. But anyway, this show, if you use the cloud reform, cloud resolving model, you can see if you use different dispersion or different type of threshold function, actually cause the difference in cloud cover and the lake water pass from anywhere from minus 20 to, you know, positive 40%. So it's quite sensitive. Also, this kind of makes sense. It's like, remember this. XS is the ratio of mass mean to critical mass, actually something give a good indicator when the rain actually start to form. This, based on this theory, we try to see some validation, okay? Whether actually you can validate this from observations. Because in situ measurement it's very hard to actually catch this stuff. And so collaborate with scientists in University of Wyoming has an aircraft with a cloud radar in it. Okay? And therefore, and also have all kinds of microphysics per probe. He can see by radar, measurements radar reflectivity, and all at the same time, he can see what corresponds each radar reflectivity, can see whether actually there are some drops, visual side drops. Okay? And to do that, they can get a PDF. This measurements of this dot, different dots are from his measurement. And by using very similar idea, actually, you can derive a theoretical radar threshold function. Right? And what that means is, radar cloud radar reflectivity increase. At the very beginning, there is no raindrops. They are almost doesn't change. Then suddenly, like this behavior. The curves are derived from the theory. Again, the theoretical threshold radar reflectivity function, also a function of drop number concentration, dispersion. But because of dispersion, again, the radar people right now cannot handle it, okay? They only measure radar reflectivity, and some try to use cloud radar to get number concentration. Because they don't carry dispersion, if I would just consider a number concentration here. This is the use the value number of concentration from the measurement, this theoretical curve.
So it's a different clouds or different
clouds. These measurements are actually stratocumulus clouds in the coast area near Oregon. But and from here, actually, you can see, depends on the type of cloud the specific cloud you're sampling. The threshold, although you have this threshold behavior, okay, but the threshold is not like delta function. Therefore, there's a question where you define, how you define the radar threshold, okay, and you know, in remote sensing community, sometimes it's very important for them to define this parameter because precipitating clouds have very different behavior with non-precipitating clouds. They need to use different expressions in their retrieval. And so to get that, we define one slide here is about, I think it's 90%. Once you get this about 0.9, that's the value we use here. So this will get this one. Drop number, threshold radar reflectivity as a function of drop number concentration. Okay? Then you will expect with the increased drop number concentration, the threshold radar reflectivity increase. This is a theoretical curve. It's expressed right here. This is some measurement. So this kind of, I think it's probably the first measurement actually gives some kind of indication whether, you know, the arc corrosion process how the arc corrosion process should behave. Well, to relate to that one, Andy yesterday gave a talk. Right. Remember that he showed this action here. When you increase aerosol loading, okay, when you increase aerosol loading, you increase drop number concentration, you actually make the warm the height where the warm rim start higher. Okay. So from that to the previous view graph, you can see because threshold reflectivity had the same behavior. You actually can derive this in this picture. You can get a threshold liquid water content, give drop number concentration. The threshold liquid water content that determines roughly whether you rain or star or not, given drop number concentration. And this is the theoretical thing. So if this is a clean cloud, roughly, this is the theoretical expression, this polluted cloud. So that means is the in a polluted cloud, you have more water, can hold more water. Well, that makes sense. Right? And this is a nice one, I think. This is drop number constant. You can do the same thing. Similar thing, not exact same. You can derive actually the height, the threshold height for the onset of a rain. Okay? This is what I did. You actually derive the its expression is not linear, but close. This is to the power of 3 over 4.
It's linear with LC. Height is linear with the critical water content.
Height is linear with liquid water content under assumption adiabatic. That's the assumption I use actually here. Okay, then you can derive the height. Okay. And this is the measurements I have before. So after Andy's talk yesterday, and he's gracious enough to give his view graph, I just read off his data, the data point from his view graph this morning, and put it here. This is the red dot here. So you can see, well, generally speaking, the theory actually covers the range of measures reasonably well. Of course, there are differences, and that can cause many things we don't really know. These are pretty much finished my talk. The last few slides, I just want to emphasize. Okay, you have this nice picture, but don't forget turbulence. I haven't really talked about turbulence. Turbulence makes things messy. Here is the say identify adiabatic cloud. Suppose you have very little adiabatic effects, then you can see this nice slope. First indirect effects pretty well, but this is a cloud you have sub-adiabatic clouds. We suppose have a lot of entrainment mixing effect. Then you hardly see any behavior. Okay, and we have the similar stuff here. If this black curve is represent a number concentration change with relative dispersion. Okay, remember aerosol actually cause increase. We just change aerosol loading, we will have this behavior. But this is a one-layer flight sample. No, adiabatic is just like there is a little, very little entrainment mixing in. You know, there is no exchange with outside. Then you can see this dynamics cause behavior exactly the opposite with aerosol effect. So, but you know, this is from the reality, it's just hard to differentiate them. How you are going to separate them? So that's why I think the challenge, the biggest challenge is probably to cloud physics and how to parameterize the cloud properties and aerosol cloud indirect aerosol cloud interactions in the climate model is how to represent the effects from turbulence. I just stop here. Oh, this is the last one from response. This is just thinking. Yeah, how we're going to how we consider number. Yeah, how we're going to consider number amount actually in the atmosphere. You have aerosols, you have droplets, you have raindrops. So you can think of they are typically they are stable state. You see in the valley, but how to convert from here to here, from here to here, you can consider them as a metastable state. Then hopefully you can have some kind of unified theory, which I don't know, just an idea. And I'll put up this for you to enjoy and take questions. Thanks.
That's beautiful.
But this question is what, you know.
Do we have even more questions? Remarks, suggestions.
So too many or too few, that of course means that's too many or too few to make life miserable. So of course, I answer affirmative to that.
I'm going to make a short remark. First of all, I think that for turbulent people, for theoreticians particularly, it's a shame that we don't have a formula for this, let's say, we have water vapor, which is passive scalar, we have a dry environment, we have some kind of a mixing. Cloud starts, mixing starts, droplet growth starts. Means we have passive scalar, it's basically passive, which is something which stands on the right-hand side of the equation for the droplet growth. So you need a statistics of a quantity, which is an integral along Lagrangian trajectory of a passive scalar. And but on the better side, brighter side, what I want to say is that at least there are decent numerics, and Alessandro, he also participated in, and Antonio Celani did. What I really would be if we have a more or less, well, not very realistic, but kind of realistic turbulence and put the droplets and only condensation and evaporation, no collision, just very small droplets, what would be the width of the distribution?
That'd be very, actually, at least you get some ideas.
But we don't have nice analytical formula, even semi-empirical.
But there is
a shame. I mean, we need to invent some formula, just maybe out of CMA. Okay, so let's put this program about. Okay, if there are no other remarks, let's have lunch.
I'll ask you a question.
Thank you. I'm trying to get lunch. Well, let's find people more remarks.